Hi, good morning. My name's Rich and we're Consumer. We focus on recruiting, marketing, innovation and sales professionals across the FMCG sector. And this is the FMCG podcast where we talk with some of the leaders that you might have seen or might not have seen and hear their insights on their industry specialisms and also, more importantly, their careers. Today, we're really excited because we have got Gareth Turner on the show with us. Gareth is the founder of Big Black Door Consultancy and previously worked at the likes of Heineken, Arla and also Weetabix, where you might have seen some of his work. So Gareth, over to you. Can you just give us a quick overview on you, your business at the moment and what you're up to?
Yes, thanks. Yeah, you got it right. That's my career history. Started in sales, moved over to marketing at Heineken. They gave me a chance there to be a round peg in a round hole. Did a number of jobs there. Did the last set of Peter Kay ads for John Smith, and good to see him back and about now. Then I went to Arla, did a number of roles there, including marketing director for Butter, and did the Arla brand sort of global relaunch there. And then was at Weetabix for 3 years as head of marketing there. And then in July, I left Weetabix to set up on my own a marketing consultancy called Big Black Door. And I suppose the shtick there for Big Black Door is that I want to simplify people's marketing, because I think that simple marketing is the better marketing. That's good marketing. I see too many people selling overcomplicated solutions and too many founders just bewildered by the choices that are available to them. So I'm not a special case. I've just got miles on the clock, right? I've got 25 years of doing the shizzle, and I can see through some of that junk and put that experience to the use of some people who can see the benefit.
Smashing. No, that's great. Well, I've really enjoyed kind of watching your career from afar. I know we've never worked together directly before, but I've been following your content for probably a couple of years, and I think like a lot of people, I probably kind of picked up on your thoughts on marketing after the beans and mix, which we'll come into later. It's great to have you on the show, and I think people watching this will get loads of value from kind of your insights on marketing and careers in that space. But just to kind of kick off with that sort of first question on that front, Gareth, what do you think sets successful brands apart in the current FMCG marketplace, which is obviously seeing inflation creeping, it's getting a bit tighter again, isn't it? Like, what do you think makes a good brand at the moment that's going to add value and maybe get people to part with a bit more cash versus just trading down into private label?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's tough. I hope they're unusual times, right? But brands, well-established, long-term invested, strategically developed brands are more able to charge a price premium, right? And it might be we're properly testing that right now. Mm. And I saw Kantar's data from yesterday saying that, I forget the numbers now, but 14% or something inflation in food, and they're seeing more people going to private label. But you've got to give yourself half a chance. If you're a brand, you've got to be able to charge a premium, because that's the brand tax, right? If you like put it that way. But you do that through long-term, strategic, looking at all the P's, right? Not just communication, because that's only one part of one of the P's. And I know we all get a bit excited about that. But it's long-term, simple, strategic, well-invested approach to marketing. They're the brands that will stand out right now. You get the basics right, get the strategy right. Get strategy right before you go to tactics.
Yeah. It's amazing how many, one of the reasons I love recruiting in the UK is it's such a buoyant market for new brands, like British consumers. When I chat to some of the leaders we work with in Europe, Europeans seem to be a lot more sort of conservative in what brands are shop. Brits seem to give anything a try, which it makes it really exciting, dynamic. But you see a lot of what we sort of call startup landfills. There's a lot of buzz behind it, 2-3 years, then bang, it's gone. I mean, one of our favourite products that we reviewed recently, Doisy and Dam, I mean, they've kind of had a bit of a decline, unfortunately, but it seems, you know, the buzz around them seemed like they were just on an absolute wave, you know, 18 months ago, and it seems like a lot of brands come unstuck for various reasons. You see a lot of brands as well that look solid, that have got great heritage, just they hit a rocky patch and then they just cannibalize, don't they, and they struggle to kind of get up from that again. So it's really interesting, that insight you've got there around keeping things focused strategically and long term. Because I guess it's that stamina, it's that endurance, it's that fitness, isn't it? It's the fitness test, really.
You can When you've got a strong brand, you've got a well-established brand positioning. When you've done you've got your fundamentals right, and done the stuff that the sort of less glamorous stuff, the stuff that goes in the background. When you've got that right, you can keep yourself relevant. You can move on, but not move off. Right. So you can keep your brand positioning relevant and exciting for new consumers, for new younger people, for different cohorts of people. You can flex the messaging to be relevant for a number of people without moving away from brand strategy.
Yeah. Just with that in mind, Gareth, what would you say are some of the FMCG brands that you think we should all keep our eyes on that kind of demonstrate those qualities that you've outlined there?
I'm working with a great brand called Spoon Cereals at the moment, right?
Oh, yeah,
they're a very, very young brand. They're not that young. They're growing. They've got great distribution in Tesco, and they do things properly. So we've got the fundamentals in place. We're slowly testing and learning different things there. They're an exciting brand to watch. I see in the background they got Mighty Milk. They're a good brand to watch. I've done a little bit of work with those guys as well, and they're good people doing exciting stuff, doing it the correct way. So Julian, the marketing director there, we worked together at Arla. He knows how to do marketing, right? So watch those guys. I suppose being the broader FMCG space, I think we're recording this at the start of November, right? And we're just starting to see the Christmas ads coming in. I think Asda are doing some interesting stuff. Like they've had relatively recently had a big takeover. Their Christmas ad has got a lot of interest with Buddy the Elf in there. But they're also, beyond their comms, you look at the sort of fundamentals of their business. I think they just announced a big play into express stores, into convenience stores, right? And they're starting to open up. I think the first one opened up yesterday in Birmingham. So they're a brand to watch. They're doing some interesting stuff. And yeah, I mean, I could go on. There's a brand totally outside my remit, but there's a feminine hygiene care called Ann Sisters.
Oh yeah,
I've spoken to them a couple of times. That's interesting. What they're doing there? There's always small brands challenging convention, challenging the mainstream. Whether or not they survive in the long term, they're pushing the establishment to do things differently, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. Like, you've got some like good brands behind us, but three of our favourites actually are Native, just by my head, Minor Figures, and the Mr. Filberts, like for different reasons. But Mr. Filberts are really interesting because they're a Southwest based brand, and it's fine foods, and they've spent a long time building their brand through fine food wholesale, really good channel management, basically developing the kind of groundwork to be best in class with kind of exciting, adventurous snacking and really kind of playing on that gifting occasion. So they know their shopper, they understand the occasion people buy, and they haven't grown too quick. They also control their ops and manufacturing as well. So they've got really good control of costs. And Mark, the owner, when he speaks to me, he's just got such a strong understanding of who buys his brand and why. And that really comes across. Same with that Minor Figures and Native as well. It's a very it's quite a simple offering. They've not gone too wide too quick. And also they're very sort of on point all the time in their message because they understand what the brand's about. Whereas some of the brands that we've found sometimes we've struggled to get our head round from a recruitment perspective in terms of what the offering is for a candidate in their career, or even just how to communicate to them. It just feels like they haven't distilled that central purpose down. And that's one of the things that always stands out to me when I'm looking at like who I want to work with as a recruiter. Obviously, a slightly different angle, but it's like, actually, is it a story I can really get behind? Does it make sense to me? Mm-hmm. Do I understand why it makes sense to the market, but also for people in their careers as well? And I think it's not just enough to have a good product, isn't it? You've got to understand why people want that product. And it sounds basic, doesn't it? But I think it's really easy to get caught up in the excitement of the idea, isn't it?
Yeah, and you overcomplicate it. It's very easy to overcomplicate. I've done it myself, right? It's very easy to overcomplicate it. But if you just come back to fundamentals, understand the marketplace, your market positioning, your market orientation, then understand how you're going to win in that market. Well, that's the first two parts of your marketing strategy. You've got a market orientation, you've got a strategy, and then you execute. But when you start going to execution first, That's when you overcomplicate things because you don't understand why you're doing this. So for a made up example, with a it's not actually made up. People would come to me a few years ago and they'd say, "We need to be on TikTok, Gareth. We need to be on TikTok."
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Why? Why do we need to be on TikTok? I did it myself, right, with John Smith many years ago. We created an app back in the days, you know, when in the early days of the iPhone, right? They had the Carlin did this thing called the iPint. I don't know if you remember that. I was at Heineken, right? And we said, well, we need something. We said, well, that's good. We need to do something. So we created an app, a darts game for John Smith's drink, John Smith's darts app. It was a great game, but it was totally irrelevant to our drinkers, our core audience at that time. So if I had my time again, I'd have been saying, why? Why do I need to create a darts app? If we do it in the full knowledge that it's just for us in the business here to test and learn and do a bit of navel gazing, that's, we just do it in that.
Yeah.
Let's be open about that and do it, and we'll test and learn, and we might then scale that for another one of our brands. Mm. But let's not do that in the hope that we're going to suddenly get loads of sales from John Smith's drinkers, because that's just simply not going to be the case.
That's really interesting. Yeah, yeah. Which is just on that point, actually, because that's quite a nice bridge. Just what do you think are some of the main differences between how brands were being built 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and now? You might say not at all, but like, have you seen any change in the way that people approach good brand management?
I don't know. I don't think so. I'm not. I'm going to just come across as an old fecker who it was different in my day. I suppose if I'm exaggerating to make a point here, I think in terms of brand management, I think I do see more tactics ahead of strategy. Mm. I have that conversation more often. There's just more stuff to go after, right? There's more channels than there was when I was on John Smith. When I moved across from sales into marketing, you basically did TV or not much else.
Yeah.
TV or radio or putting you a print, right? But there's just so many more channels now. So it is more confusing.
Yeah.
But that makes the bedrock of a great strategy even more important.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder whether people are getting the right amount of training, whether people are, again, when I was at Heineken, right? And I was saying Arlo and Weetabix, these were brands, businesses that invested in their people in training. And I wonder whether that might be something that gets cut in the current climate. But at Heineken, I had a 3-day residential course on how to write a brief, a 3-day residential course on how to assess the work that the creative agencies brought back to me. I had a 3-day residential course on how to work best with my agencies. I'm not sure many people are doing that anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, are businesses investing in their brand managers, their brand management? I'm not sure. I also see brands have, I think there's less of a, certainly since the pandemic, I think there's less of a barrier to entry for brands. So I see more startup scale-ups, certainly in food and drink, than there would have been 5 or 10 years ago. I think the sort of fractional manufacturing, you're able to contract in to buy a bit of space and time in different manufacturing plants, different bottling, canning lines, etc. That's different. The D2C model now, people I think I still think it's very difficult to make money from D2C.
Yeah.
I think people are more open to it now since the pandemic. When you know, I used to buy my coffee from a local shop, but they were no longer available. So I now have a D2C relationship with North Star Roast. That's another one to keep an eye out for.
North Star
Roast in Leeds. Their D2C business must have boomed over the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
So I think the barriers to entry are less. So you get more brands and more people in need of a bit of strategic direction.
Interesting. Yeah. Yes, so if I could summarise then, that the principles of good brand management are pretty timeless, but actually the market context in which people are exercising those is quite different. So there's kind of new challenges on how you, I guess, don't lose your focus and get lost in the wool.
Yeah, if you understand the market in which you're operating and you understand the consumer journey or the the path to purchase or the funnel, whatever you want to call it,
Yeah.
you understand where you lack. What if you think of the funnel, which it's a decay rate, it decays, decays down to purchase and repeat. So if you understand where your disproportionate decay rate is,
yeah,
and that helps you, right? Just knowing that.
Yeah, yeah.
So for most brands, it's awareness. If you look at the textbooks, for most small brands, the biggest thing to do is just to make more people aware of you.
Interesting.
If you can just do that,
yeah,
you can just do that, and you don't. It doesn't need to be expensive. If you can just do that, then you can grow your brand.
That's fascinating. Yeah, really interesting. Well, just kind of on that point, just taking it back to your career a little bit, like how have you found moving from different categories, you know, beta dairy to cereal? Because one of the things that we find as recruiters that drives us around on the twist is, I think FMCGs is a terrible industry for pigeonholing people. That's a dairy person. That's an ambient person. That's a spirits person. Even within drinks, we do a lot in alcoholic drinks. You know, some people say, oh, they're more beer than spirits. Like, crikey, you know, they work for Heineken. So how have you found those changes and how have you navigated it? Because a lot of people be quite envious of kind of how many interesting sort of rotations around different verticals that you've done.
Yeah, I have been lucky. I don't know how I did it. I didn't think it was a big deal at the time. So maybe I lucked it out. I've not found it too difficult. You know, I think if you understand what you need to do.
Yeah.
Right. If you understand, so you know, spoiler alert, I was an Arla for 7 years. I don't drink milk, or milkshakes, or I don't drink milk. I eat a lot of butter and cheese, right? But that's another story with my cardiac surgeon.
Christmas is coming. Why not?
the Bailey's double cream that Arla. Holy moly! If people do anything after this podcast, they have to go and buy that at Christmas. That's the rule. It wasn't too bad. If you start with the fundamentals, so understand your market, work out what your strategy is, and execute. So, I mean, that's a model that I've used when I was at Heineken, at Arla, at Weetabix, and yeah. I'm now deploying the Big Black Door. Right. So it's not difficult. You have a deep understanding of where you fit into the market, your competitive set, what your business objectives are, and then how you can unlock that. And you unlock that by understanding your consumers and the routes to get to those consumers. And then how are we gonna get foodies to believe that Weetabix is the tastiest product in the world, because we think by doing that it will drive XX yeah. sales. Right? That's you boil it down to something like that, and then it becomes a simple thing that everyone knows what the job to be done is. And if you have one big, hairy, audacious goal that everyone is going after, and that's what we did at Weetabix, we had everyone going after in the brand team. We all knew what the number one objective was, and it's boring because you keep banging that bell time and time and time again, so that everyone is very clear what your objective is, and that then becomes your filter for sorting the wheat from the chaff, for deciding whether this thing that's coming in, this new idea that someone's presenting to you, will it help me achieve that goal?
That's really interesting.
And if it does, great. I'll think about that, and we'll try and get a good deal on it. If it doesn't, then I'm not interested. It doesn't mean your idea is a bad idea. It just means that it's not going to help me with that goal.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so this is something that we see quite often chatting to, you know, brand managers, senior brand managers. And it often is really shown up in second stage presentation tasks. Amazingly, they come unstuck because they don't set the context for the product that they want to work on and manage across different channels or across different kind of, comms spaces or comms channels rather than retail channels. And they just want to do like almost like a pest analysis of the market, pest analysis or kind of SWOT analysis of the brand. But then there's then no sort of follow through on actually taking those objectives and working back to, right, what does this mean? What's like the one concrete action that we're going to hang our hat around and build everything else on? That sometimes seems to be lacking. But from what you're saying there, actually, if people are missing the fundamentals of brand management, then take them out of their context, take them out of the pond that they've been in, then they've not necessarily got the approach or the structure and the framework to to move into a new category. But if you get the fundamentals right and your skill set and your toolbox, then it allows you to move verticals more easily because you've got a toolkit that allows you to understand the principles, the fundamentals of the brand, and then apply it to your context.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, for in interviewing, what I'm looking for is people who can make decisions, people who can prioritize, because there's always the array of choice is bewildering.
Yeah.
So I want, and you can always make a pretty coherent rationale for choice A, choice B, or choice C, right? But I want someone just to make a recommendation.
Make a decision. Yeah.
I want someone to say it's choice A for the following reasons, and then obviously I'm going to say, well, what about choice B and choice C? Because and I just want to have people to justify it, right? But it's being able to deal with ambiguity. That's it. Took me a long time. Well, I came from sales into marketing. It took me a long time to get my head around that. I was always looking for certainty that you know, my sales are greater than your sales. That means I'm a better salesperson, right? That's how it works. But that's not how it is in marketing. You do some research on two pack designs. It will come back as they've each got their merits. Okay, what I wanted was an absolute. I wanted
Where's my crystal ball?
But that's not the case. That's not how it works.
Yeah. Well, just with that in mind then, how do big brands stand out in a market that's very disruptive and very disrupted? You know, there's a lot of new brands that come through quick, overpromote themselves, die, but they can just cannibalise sales. How do you make sure that you are one of those long-standing, powerful brands with staying power that we were talking about?
I think you've got to know what you stand for and be true to that. So not be sort of a scattergun approach. Mm-hmm. You've got to have everything pulling on your center of gravity to build your brand, because that's how and as a big brand, it's also okay to be to come in second or third to the market.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be first to market for everything. Mm-hmm. You can allow some of the smaller brands who are going to be more agile. You can allow them to be mind traders for you, to find out what's getting some traction, and then you can come in and do your way. And a great example of that is when I was working on Bulmers. So I was working on Bulmers cider brand, and back in the day when I was there, it was, we had apple cider, we had pear cider, we had apple and pear together. That was innovative. but people like Recordlig and Copperberg were coming in with their crazy new fruit ciders and stealing our business, right? They were doing very, very well. They were very sweet, very sugary, you know, not very cidery ciders. So you put those two things together. Bulmers is a brand that has been around since 1880 something, right? Mm-hmm. You've got these new brands. So we had to do something. We had to defend there. We had to stop that loss, but we had to do it in a way that was true to Bulmers. Mm-hmm. So we launched our first fruit cider. I launched the first fruit cider there. It was called Bulmers number 17 at the time. It was like a crushed red berries cut with a shot of lime, right? That was the thing. Yeah. But it was a more cidery fruit cider
than the other one.
So we did it true to our brand. And we weren't first to market. We were probably fourth or fifth to market. But that fruit cider became the biggest fruit cider in the UK because we did it true to our brand. We invested heavily in it, and we'd already seen there was a market. So that was very, and they still have those kind of fruit ciders in their portfolio. So it's obviously done very well for them.
Yeah, yeah. So keeps the fundamentals. That's the theme that's coming through. I mean, I think I know what you might say on this question, but say you were addressing a room of marketing managers, and you know the question was, look, what's the one thing that they can do, if there's anything that they can do to keep their brand fighting fit? What would you zero in on? What would you advise them on?
Well, the reality is that right now, I'm going to suggest that every brand manager in the country has had a conversation about cutting their budgets.
Interesting.
If they haven't, buckle up, mate. It's coming. It's because it's going to happen.
Yeah.
What can brands that continue to invest through economic challenges come out stronger?
Yeah.
So, if you've been having those conversations for several years, then now's the time to sort of go back to that with your with the board and say, look, here's all the evidence, and the evidence is out there, right? With your permission, I'll create a web page, and I'll put some links to these references that I've
given. Yeah, that'd be fantastic. Right? That'd be great.
BigBlackDoor.com, we'll call it /FMCG. I'll create that page, and I'll put links to some of these articles, right? So there are loads of articles about how brands in the last recession that invested came out stronger. It's something like 280% or something stronger.
Yeah.
So that's where I'll be going first. But let's assume that the financial controller, the financial director says, yeah, very good, Gareth. I just need you to cut £1 million. JFDI, mate, JFDI. So you can be pragmatic on that. You can look at where the nice to-dos have been. Look at how you can protect your working spend rather than non-working spend. So stuff that is amplifying the work you're doing rather than creating new work. What can you defer to next year? So the advice I'd be giving brand teams is fight hard to protect your budgets, but not at a point where it becomes career limiting with the board.
Yeah.
And when you can go no further, be pragmatic, and you can trim in certain ways to protect the core of what you're doing. And you go back to your number one objective, which is to grow penetration or to grow awareness or to whatever the thing is you're focusing on. Anything that isn't pulling 100% in the right direction, that's where I'll be going first to cut my budget.
Oh, that's great. No, thank you. That's super, super granular advice. People listening really appreciate that.
One build on that actually is that someone said I was in an event recently, and they said, when you think about it, when someone says you need to cut your marketing budget, and it's great. Okay, we can do that. But the fundamental business challenge that you've asked me to do hasn't gone away. There's an economic crisis going on. I totally accept that. But if you want me to grow the business, we've already identified that we need to grow awareness to do that, or whatever your number one objective is. That hasn't gone away. So if we still want to grow, we still need to do those things. And in a economic crisis, there are opportunities. So in the pandemic, when lots of advertisers were pulling out of advertising, at Weetabix, we doubled down. We increased our spend. Yeah. Because media was cheap and people were pulling out. And so we had a competitive advantage.
Yeah.
So there are opportunities in the current climate.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I'm aware that time's ticking on. But I just wanted to kind of get, because that answers a couple of questions really nicely there around like why brands do feel the squeeze. So that's kind of covered off really well. Could you just give us like a quick headline on the Beans and Bix, because that's what lots of people know you for. That's how I came across it. It was fantastic. Like, just those snapshots that people often get all hung up on. Is it a streak of genius? Is it in-depth planning? What leads to a moment like that?
A bit of everything. If it was genius, it wasn't mine. I need to be absolutely clear on that. There's two names I need to check whenever I talk about this. There's Elaine Wan, who was the assistant brand manager on Weetabix, who is the assistant brand manager on Weetabix when I was there, and Frank, our social media agency. It's their brainchild, right? I have to check that. But if a straw Venn diagram, right, it comes at the intersection of strategy and bravery. I won't bore you with the full brand strategy there, but one of the strands of the brand strategy was to create some sort of inspiration around serve suggestions. Mm-hmm. And you see it in the TV advertising they do with they call it Any Which Weebix. They got crazy toppings, and they sort of make faces out of stuff. It's all like a top-down sort of advert. And we did a recipe book, and one of those recipes was this breaded, like an alternative to breaded sort of KFC style chicken. It was like with Weetabix. That got a bit of traction, and we thought, well, there's these sort of weird and wacky recipes that let's be a bit bolder with some of those. And that was the kernel of the idea.
Yeah.
And then we worked hard to create a culture of bravery in the department. So, we have sort of a couple of sort of sayings to try and allow us to be a bit bolder. We said that we had a yes if approach to marketing or to challenges, which is, well, yeah, we could do that if you can show me that, blah, blah, blah. The flip of that, which is very similar, is, well, no, we can't do that because.
Yeah.
So in that Beans on Bits example, we talked about, well, we could do that if it won't damage our taste credentials. So show me that it won't damage our taste credentials, because taste is important for any food. Well, it didn't damage our taste credentials. What I could have said, what we could have said as a business was, well, no, we won't do that because we think it will damage our taste credentials. It's a very similar conversation, but one is more empowering.
Yeah.
And the second question we ask is, well, what's the worst that could happen?
Mm-hmm.
And, well, the worst that could happen there was someone just keeps scrolling past it.
Yeah, yeah, really. True.
No one's going to go, hang on, what was that? I'm never buying that again.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just not going to happen, right? So, you know, what we do isn't that important. So we took a chance on it, and it was big. It got 1.3 billion impressions, media value of a couple of million pounds. It was big, but it was part of a broader campaign that is about recipe inspiration.
That's fascinating. And it tracks back to your piece there about understanding the fundamentals, clear strategy. If you've got a clear strategy, you can have a clear campaign, and then you get the opportunity to double down on a theme, don't you? But if you've not got that, you'll never have anything to double down on, because you'd just be lost in the weeds, won't you?
Yeah, we had to. You know, the objective there was to make our brand more relevant to different audiences.
Yeah,
and it comes from the fact that Weetabix is a traditional advertiser. It's TV centric advertising, and we had to move beyond that because TV advertising is naturally skewing older, and if you want to chase younger audiences on TV, we can do it, but it's very expensive. Mm. A cheaper way of doing it would be to look at upping your social media game, and that's what we did.
That's great. There's absolutely loads for people to kind of dig into in this podcast in terms of advice their career. But I guess two final questions, which are sort of interlinked. One, you know, if there was one quality someone can develop as a marketing leader, what should it be? And then on the back of that, tell us how people can follow you, because I think your content's great. People are keen to kind of follow you and hear your thoughts on marketing.
One quality would be just be commercial. I think don't sit in your ivory tower. Ultimately, what you're doing is to drive sales and drive value and growth for the business. So don't lose sight of that.
Great. That's really good, yeah. But definitely what we see as recruiters, like, they're so what all the time that we get from hiring managers. And it's amazing how many people coming through, just they get caught up in the value that they add in their context, but they never asked so what in another context. And it's being commercial, isn't it? But how can people follow you then, Gareth? Where can people find you? If you've got a blog, I know you're on LinkedIn a lot. What's the best way for people to follow you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on there. I say my website, bigblackdoor.com. If you do /FMCG, I'll put a link to my newsletter and stuff there. But yeah, it'd be great to continue the conversation online.
Yeah, smash in. Well, look, thanks so much for coming on the podcast, Gareth. It's been really insightful. I've learned loads. I'm sure people listening will do. If you've enjoyed today, people, if you've been watching, listening, please do reach out. Thank Gareth for his time. Everyone that comes on our show, they do it just for the love, just to invest in the industry. And that's what this is all about, is investing in your career. So do, you know, reach out and say thank you. Make sure you follow Gareth and follow Big Black Dolby. Interesting stuff coming through from there. And again, Gareth, thanks so much. It's been an absolute blast. And I'm sure we'll keep in touch. Take care.